Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Ghost Lights of Forest Field by M.L. Bullock. Narrated by Emily Lawrence and Cody Roberts. Prologue, 1789. It wasn't the sound of the door opening that woke Marguerite Babineau this time. She lay quite still in the squeaky bed, the quilt pulled up around her neck, protecting her from the chilly air. Then she heard the sound again, the one that woke her. It was a unique sound, not her bedmate's soft snoring, a moaning. No, not moaning. This was singing. Marguerite heard a woman's voice, soft and high. It came from outside her window, but how was that possible? Her curiosity grew as her ears strained to capture the fading voice. There it was again, but it sounded even farther away now. Unable to resist looking for the source of the sound, she slid out from under the blanket, tugged on her heavy wool socks, and padded to the window. From her vantage point, Marguerite could see quite a long way. The Bossarge house was two stories high, the highest in all the fort. And from here in the attic, the young woman had a wide view of the surrounding area. What Marguerite saw surprised her. There were lights in the meadow just beyond the fort, soft, blue lights like fallen stars that decided to come down and rest on the earth below. They were small illuminations, but not so small as to be written off as some sort of firefly or other insect. They appeared to be the size of a man's hand, but then they began pulsating, getting smaller and then larger at random. No, not random, in unison. She counted six of them now, and all the blue lights were moving away from the fort, across the meadow, and into the woods beyond. Marguerite could not fight the compulsion she now felt. The absolute conviction that she must go see these lights closer. She paused as she wrapped a borrowed shawl around her thin shoulders and looked down into the heartbreakingly perfect face of her benefactor's daughter, Elizabeth Bossarge. Even sleeping, Elizabeth was far more beautiful than Marguerite. Marguerite felt a familiar twinge of jealousy flare up within her. Maybe she couldn't manage to recite prose perfectly, and she had no head for figures or deep thought. Yes, it was true that she had to surrender her late family's small fortune for her upkeep, but she did not have to tell Elizabeth about what she heard now. She wouldn't. She just wouldn't. Marguerite smiled, happy that after 2 years of unhappy living with the Bossarge family, she had something of her own. As quickly as she could, Marguerite slipped on her black boots. She tiptoed across the wooden floor, pausing twice when the boards squeaked, and carefully navigated the narrow staircase. She had walked only a few steps down before the combined snoring of Bettina and Edward Bossarge rose to greet her. What a horrible pair, even while they slept. Marguerite took some comfort in knowing that both Bossarges were heavy sleepers. The only person she worried about was August, their houseman, a swarthy little man with an untrusting attitude. He was mute, but very expressive and protective of his employer's interests. Marguerite was happy to spot him sleeping in the rocking chair before the waning fire in the parlor. She hurried to the front door, quietly lifted the latch, and stepped outside. The bracing cold chilled her, but Marguerite did not let the frosty air deter her. Her heart raced as she stepped lightly down the front porch steps and hurried to a copse of trees between the house and the fort gate. She hugged the slender pine as she cast a watchful eye toward the upper walkway. The watchmen here at the fort were lazy and lacked to drink come evening time. She and Elizabeth often indulged in an evening walk. Elizabeth's mother, Bettina, believed it was good for their constitution, whatever that might be. The girls often traveled around the fort's parapet and rarely saw a watchman. Tensions had eased after a strong treaty with the Alabamu tribe was established. There were no other threats in this area, except for the biting mosquitoes that could sometimes make one sick. Sprinting to the gate now, she slid the bolt open with cold, achy fingers. Without pausing, she stepped outside. Outside to freedom. She thought she heard someone calling her name, but after waiting a few seconds and hearing nothing else, she didn't look back. Marguerite decided she needed to move fast if she was going to see the magical blue lights before they disappeared. While the moon was not full tonight, the half-moon above grew brighter by the second, and even a lazy sentry would spot her in her white dress and bright red shawl if she wasn't careful. Marguerite hadn't gotten far into the meadow before she heard a rustling in front of her. She breathed a sigh of relief when a fat brown rabbit hopped out of the thick grass and then bounced away from her. She must have startled him. "Not as much as you startled me," she thought. Marguerite hurried on her way. The light should be ahead of her soon. She had to see those blue lights up close. Who had ever heard of such a thing? "Marguerite! Wait!" It was Elizabeth. Somehow she'd heard Marguerite leave and followed her out of the fort. Stupid Elizabeth! If she insisted on yelling, she would wake up half the fort. Marguerite didn't acknowledge her, and she certainly wasn't going to wait for her. She ran faster. Her untied boots tried to slip off her feet a few times, but she pressed on and managed to outrun Elizabeth significantly. As she always did. Elizabeth wasn't strong at all. And then Marguerite heard the singing again. A woman's voice, laughing and singing. But the language she did not know. Could it be French? Spanish? It was certainly not the Alabama language. She'd heard the natives speak many times, and their language was not smooth and flowing like this one. The Alabama language was difficult to follow, although Marguerite had the basic words or phrases down. In fact, she'd mastered the language so well that Bettina Bosarge often sent her to make the monthly trades when the Alabama came with fresh deer or wild boar meat. It wasn't seemly that either Elizabeth or Bettina should engage in such activities. Mrs. Bosarge held a fierce distrust of the Alabama, but not so much that she didn't desire their furs and the wild boar meat they sometimes bartered. Marguerite flushed, thinking of the time she'd first met Chibola Bula, the most handsome young man in the Alabama tribe. They'd only spoken a few times during trading sessions, but he had made quite an impression on her. She couldn't be sure of his age, and had no idea how to pose such a question. But her heart always skipped a beat when she saw him in the square. The Alabama had no qualms about trading with women, and Chibola Bula was always fair and friendly. He had the shiniest black hair she'd ever seen, shinier than even her own. He'd brushed her hand once, and her skin had burned for hours afterward. Elizabeth had caught her rubbing at the spot and elbowed her in the side with a cautious smile. Elizabeth had whispered, "Anything between you two would be impossible." It was pointless to argue with her, and that would only reveal more of Marguerite's true feelings. The song drifted ahead of Marguerite, lingering, luring her, drawing her out of her inner thoughts. She passed through the meadow, the tall grasses brushing against her palms as she traveled. She focused her eyes on a grove of bushy cedars just ahead of her. Yes, she could see them now. There was a light. No, two lights beyond. Oh, the music. Such sweet music. She wanted to laugh aloud, to call out to the bouncing blue lights that passed near her. But doing so would reveal her hiding place, and she did not want Elizabeth to follow her. Just 20 feet. No, 15 feet now. She was so close. Suddenly, one of the lights stopped and hovered in midair. Did it see her? Marguerite made no attempt to hide from it. Why should she? She put her hand out, inviting it to touch her, give her the song she heard. Marguerite's dark hair whipped around her as a boisterous wind traveled through the trees. The light paused, bounced once, and moved toward her a few inches. She stared, unafraid, her hand still stretched out as a show of good faith. See? I'm no threat, she thought, but she didn't have the courage to declare such a thing out loud. The light bounced as if it heard her. It struck the ground, sending sparks beneath it, and then rose high above her. Then the light expanded as if it wanted to stretch into something. Was that a face? Suddenly, fear washed over her. This was no fallen star, no play of the light. This light was something else. It was a ghost. Yes, that had to be it. These were ghost lights, and they'd seen her. They knew she was there because she'd stupidly reached for them. She did not move. The light did not move either, but continued to hover in place. There was no more singing or whispering. The sounds combined and became a strange buzzing. What is happening? And then hands were on her, one on her mouth and one around her waist. The hands were those of a man. They grabbed her and pulled her down into the frosty grass. She wanted to scream, to call out and break free from her unknown captor, until she heard a familiar voice in her ear. Tibola Bula! Marguerite was too surprised to fight him. He released her mouth, but his arm remained firmly around her waist. His face was in front of her now, and he held up a finger to his lips. His dark eyes warned her to remain quiet. Marguerite shivered when she spotted a gleaming knife at his side. Could she trust him? Of course she could. Tibola Bula would never harm her. She nodded back and held her breath. They were hidden deep in the grass now, and the low branches of the cedar trees hung over them. She didn't call out for help. She didn't try to run. She wanted to hide. Something felt wrong. Her mouth opened to question him, but he shook his head, and she remained silent. She heard another voice now, a sweet voice. Marguerite's heart fell. Elizabeth. Marguerite struggled to rise, for she had to warn her friend, but Tibola Bula would not let her go. His eyes were wide with fear, and she knew something was certainly wrong. Marguerite struggled against his hard body, even as she heard the grass stirring on the other side of the tree. The lats were closing in on them, but Tibola Bula held her tight. Then the buzzing ceased, and the lats blasted past them, dividing evenly around the tree, three on each side. The blue lats did not bounce playfully now. They headed toward Elizabeth with purpose. Marguerite continued to struggle, and Tibola Bula finally released her. She lost her shawl as she ran behind the lights. Too afraid to cry out, but desperate to intervene, she hoped to reach Elizabeth before they did. She lost one of her boots and ran awkwardly through the cold grass of the field. "Marguerite! Where are you?" Elizabeth shouted as she stood in the meadow. Marguerite could see Elizabeth clearly now, but her inner voice warned her to be still and remain silent. She glanced behind her to look for Tibola Bula, but could not spot him. Like a coward, she squatted in the tall grass and watched as the lats whirled around Elizabeth. The young woman spun around, whimpering. "Go away!" Elizabeth swatted at the blue lats like they were pesky insects. The largest of the illuminations swung closer as if to examine her, just as it had examined Marguerite a few minutes ago. When it didn't immediately harm her, Elizabeth's expression became less fearful. And like Marguerite had earlier, she reached out her hand. The lats grew still, bounced and expanded, just as they had with Marguerite. The beam hovered near Elizabeth's hand. It was so close that Marguerite believed her friend would touch it any second now. She wanted to warn her, shout to her, but she found that she couldn't speak a word. A smile beamed across Elizabeth's beautiful face as she made contact with the curious radiance. But her joy lasted only the briefest of moments. Elizabeth snatched her hand back in pain as the lats closed in around her. They covered her, expanding into one overwhelming lat and then blasting her with an evil hiss. Marguerite watched in horror as Elizabeth burned. Her blonde hair caught aflame first, just the tips of it, and then the hem of her nightgown blackened. Elizabeth's skin caught fire faster than Marguerite could even imagine. As Elizabeth's beautiful face twisted in agony, she screamed until she screamed no more. She fell to the ground in a burning heap, and the lats whirled away to the edge of the meadow, vanishing into nothingness. Marguerite could only scream and cry. Chapter 1. Cassidy Rat. I saw Helen's face through the peephole of Uncle Derek's front door and smiled with relief because it wasn't a ghost named Letitia. In Helen's hands was a basket of goodies, along with her usual tote bag. I didn't know why I was so apprehensive about door knocks at my new address. So far, no one had terrorized me. No spirits had rung bells or invaded my space. But then again, I hadn't painted anything since I moved in, either. Or at least nothing paranormal. But I knew that would change. I could already sense an image approaching, and I would see it fully soon. I shivered at that weird, semi-psychic insight and didn't question where it came from. I'd probably never know. "Come in, my friend. I see you brought more goodies. You know you're going to have to cut that out, or at least bring sugar-free sweets. You're making me fat, Helen DeVry, and I am scheduled to run a marathon in just 3 months." Helen patted my cheek, but didn't make any promises. She stepped into the house, smelling like vanilla and cinnamon, and I trailed behind her. We'd been working on a project together every Monday for several weeks now, ever since I moved into Uncle Derek's place. Helen went into the dining room and deposited her tote bag and baked goods on the edge of the cluttered table. We had books and papers everywhere, but at least it was an organized mess. Helen and I knew exactly where everything was, including Noelle's book, Mirror Images, which had more than a few slips of paper we used as bookmarks hanging out of it. With Helen's help, I'd at least come to terms with my gift and made a stab at understanding it. But to add to the mystery of why I saw visions and where they came from, I recently discovered Uncle Derek's collection of newspaper clippings about my sister and me, as well as some about my mother. I hadn't noticed it before, but each of us rat ladies had been a creative person in our own way. My mother enjoyed sculpting and apparently won a few awards for her nudes. Kylie could sketch from the time she was small, and Uncle Derek managed to scrapbook a photo of her accepting a blue ribbon. I painted whatever popped into my head during dreams and visions, but there wasn't much in the way of accolades for me. Unfortunately, I couldn't ask my uncle about any of it. He had been gone for months now, and I wasn't much closer to understanding my role as a visionary or paranormal painter than I had been when he showed up as a ghost at my old loft. But at least now I had someone willing to help me investigate the phenomenon. My friend Helen was an excellent student, and she had the upper hand when it came to insight on local legends and family genealogies, if we ever needed that information. Yes, she knew everyone and everything about Mobile, Alabama. After a few minutes of chit-chatting, she reached for a china plate and handed it to me. I stared at the sugar-coated king cake longingly. I really wanted to say no, but how could I without hurting her feelings?
"We'll get fat together. Besides, Bruce wants me to put on some weight. I think he likes plump girls."
I laughed at her confession. Even though Helen was 65 and had a very polished appearance, she was a girl at heart. I hoped when I was her age, I'd be half as youthful. That's more than I wanted to know.
Full confession, though. I didn't bake this one. I picked it up on the way here. If you want to say no, I won't get my feelings hurt. Can you believe we're just a month away from the big boom boom? I have another confession to make. I always eat my weight in these things.
It does smell delicious, but this on top of all the Christmas treats you've already brought my way. With a devilish smile, she said,
"This goes so well with some black coffee. That cuts the sugar, and we'll work it off soon. I hear we're going out of town for our next investigation, up to Waggerville, of all places. What self-respecting ghost hangs out in the boonies?"
Helen and I poured cups of coffee, and I accepted a small sliver of the sweet cake. "Yes, I got that text this morning. I've never been to Waggerville. That's up I-65, right? What's up there?"
"Not a darn thing except Forest Field, the place we're investigating. Wait, that's not true. There are a few excellent burger joints and campsites. Besides that, it's woods as far as the eye can see. There's been some recent excitement, though. Some archaeologists are excavating a lost fort. Fort Dixon or something like that. I'm sure Midas will tell us all about it this afternoon. What time is the meeting again?"
After consulting my phone briefly, I said, "It's at 4. How are things at Dixie House? Is it still quiet? No sign of Irma?"
"No, it's downright peaceful, except for the guys working on the potholes on my street."
We chit-chatted a bit longer, and when I'd gobbled up my cake, I picked up Noelle's book and flipped to the bookmark I had inserted the night before. "In case I haven't told you, Helen, thank you for helping me with all this. I'm sure you have better things to do, but having your help with this project is a real encouragement. I have so much to learn." Helen patted her lips with a paper napkin.
"It's my pleasure. I do love exploring new subjects, especially paranormal ones. Read what you have there, and I'll tell you what I found."
She paused, her eyes tilted up to the ceiling as if she heard someone.
"You got company?"
"In the attic? No. And please don't freak me out. I think that's just the house settling." We quietly listened for a minute or two, but heard nothing else. Ready to put my mind on something else, I said, "You go first. What I bookmarked is just a passage about a dream vision Noelle had." Helen slid on her glasses and read from the printed page.
"This is from Delchamps' Spirit Guide. It says there are several ways to set boundaries with spirits. First, make sure you clear the room before attempting to make contact and after interacting with a spirit. You need to do this each session. Clearing involves using visualization in which you release all negative energy from your body. That's clearing away any energy the spirit may have left behind. You'll also have to clear the room or space where you were working. You can easily clear an area by visualizing that space as gradually filling with brilliant white light. Make sure you visualize the light in every corner of the room. Have you ever tried clearing a room or clearing yourself?"
Helen eyed me as if she were a game show host.
"What?"
I chuckled at her expression.
"No, I didn't even know that was a thing.
What about ghosts that contact you? Is there anything in there about that?" I asked hopefully. "How do I clear them away?"
"Unfortunately, no, not specifically. But I'm sure we could use some of this material. You'll have to practice this visualization thing. We could do that together. Let's practice visualizing the white light right now."
She put the book down and put her hands in her lap. Helen might have been ready to roll, but I was a bit more reluctant. "Maybe later, Helen. I'm not sure about that as a tactic. What else you got in there?" With a shrug, she picked up the small antique book again and flipped through the pages carefully.
"Here's something. Never drink or take drugs before attempting to contact a spirit.
Don't make contact while you're unhappy or emotionally drained. It says you put yourself at risk when you do that. Negative spirits can catch hold of you if you approach them with a weakened psyche. I tapped my pencil on the table and jotted down a few notes, then sighed and shook my head. I'm certainly not much of a drinker, and I'm not on any medications. I can't believe there's no one out there with the same gift as me, except this Noel person who died a decade ago. Helen offered a sad smile. How are you feeling? Nervous as heck. We have this new investigation, and I know I'll be painting. I mean, I always do. And this time, I can feel it, if that makes any sense. It used to be that visions would just show up without any warning. Now I can feel one hovering at the edge of my memory, or mind, or whatever. Do I sound crazy? Maybe I do need medication. Stop that. I think that shows growth. It means you're getting stronger. She squeezed my hand, and I asked, What if I open a door I can't close, Helen? What if it ends up like the last time where ghosts are everywhere, even ringing my doorbell or coming inside my house, leaving wet footprints on the floor? I haven't had any problems since I moved into this place, but how long can that last? She patted my hand and rose from her chair to pick up our dirty dishes. Maybe you should paint somewhere else, like in a studio? I tapped my lip with the pencil. That might work, but half the time these sessions happen in the middle of the night or when it's not convenient. I can't imagine hopping in the car when I want to paint. Helen snapped her fingers. Didn't I see a garage in the back? As if she had to go check it out right away, she took the dishes to the kitchen. Yes, I can see it from here. That's plenty big enough for an art studio, unless your uncle has it stacked with junk. No junk in there. My uncle was a very tidy guy, tidier than me by a long shot. She smiled, showing her even, white teeth. That space would make the perfect studio, Cassidy. Perhaps a little distance from your home is all you need. It's worth a shot. The more I thought about it, the better I liked the idea. It does sound like a solution. That's just far enough to make me think twice about painting, but not so far that it would put me off it completely. I'm dying to see the inside of it. Let's go have a look. Helen didn't wait for my approval. She was tugging on her jacket and heading to the back door, ready to explore the garage. As she walked, she began sharing ideas about my new creative space. So like my friend to always get ahead of herself, and me. Uncle Derek's garage was about 50 feet from the house. The concrete floor inside was pristine, as if he'd never parked a car on it once, which wasn't the case. I lifted the garage door handle, and the door slid up easily. Uncle Derek's shiny black car sat on one side. The other side was almost bare, except for a few shelves and the odd tool. This would make the perfect painting studio, Cassidy. I say move the car, have my guy come open up this wall, and put in a window to show off that fabulous view of the backyard, and add some lighting. This is so doable, and I don't think it would take that long, maybe a week. Really? I've sold the car back to the dealership. They're picking it up today. I have no use for an extra vehicle, and my uncle had no other family. Maybe this would work. She clapped her hands together, and we walked around the cool space. I had to admit, I could see the possibilities. What was the name of the guy you used for the Dixie House renovations? Mark Treadwell. I can call him for you. He stays pretty busy, so I'm not sure how quickly he could get started, but it's worth a shot. Let's do it. Normally, I didn't make impetuous decisions. But this felt right. Absolutely right. All right. Make the call, Helen. See if Mr. Treadwell is available to come take a look. The sooner, the better. Helen went back in the house to call him while I strolled around the double garage again. It looked barely used, It was like it was just waiting for me, like it had been waiting for me the whole time. I smiled at the thought, determined to be happy and...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?